Right. Well, thank you very much for all coming to listen to my talk, and well, and all the others as well. I'm really excited about getting a chance to talk to you. And so as a result, I'm pretty much expecting that I'm going to get cut off in my excitement at the 17-minute point. So what I'm hoping is that after I spend 16 and a half of the next minutes telling you, first of all, about a new perspective on quantum state estimation, and second of all, and perhaps very, very briefly, some things you didn't know about quantum state estimation, I hope that after all of that, you will take the time to come up to me later and tell me I'm an idiot and ask me about the slides that I zipped through or you didn't even get a chance to see. So without further ado, this whole idea came about when I ran into Patrick Hayden about a year ago, and it was one of those favorable conjunctions because Patrick, I was interested in quantum state estimation and Patrick was interested in entropy and had just been reading a paper called Keeping the Expert Honest. So we sort of put these two things together and came up with a hybrid version. I was really afraid at first that when I gave this talk I would get a lot of brickbats from the experimentalists. And then I ran into Andrew White, who said, "Oh well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I know I'm honest. It's those other bleeps." So that's the perspective I'd like you to take to this. Is the whole idea here is how would you ensure that somebody else that you don't necessarily trust, who's not your virtuous self, does the right thing and does something that you can believe? So without further ado, let me pose the question, what is state estimation? Fairly simple answer. The goal is to characterize a source of quantum systems, like an apparatus in a lab, an ion trap, a parametric down conversion apparatus, whatever. And the way you do it is you make measurements on a whole bunch of copies that are assumed to be identical because your apparatus does the same thing every time, right? And you get a measurement record, which is just a set of positive operators corresponding to what you observed on each of those end measurements. And then you're going to do some magic process that turns this measurement record into a single particle density matrix, and that's going to be your best guess for the density matrix that describes the state. So the key application I want you to maybe keep in your mind here is verifying quantum hardware, states and gates that you're going to use for building a quantum computer 20 years down the road to keep the NSA happy. Well, wait, this is Canada. Okay, to keep the, right. We said we were going to do it, so we will. The key observation here is that probabilities on the order of 10 to the minus 3 or 10 to the minus 5 are really important because that's where we think the fault tolerance threshold is. So if you have errors of that magnitude that you don't know about, then it's going to be very embarrassing when you try to build a quantum computer out of your hardware. So we would like a state estimation procedure that A, is capable of estimating with that precision, and B, if it's off by more than that, will tell us that it is. So what's the problem? What am I up here talking about? Well, the current technology is maximum likelihood estimation. It's a fairly simple concept, although it's computationally challenging. Here's your measurement record, bunch of positive operators. You can compute the conditional probability of getting that measurement record if the state was rho. So this is a function, the likelihood of rho. And then we simply say, well, what rho maximizes that likelihood? And that is your maximum likelihood estimate. Now, the problem with this is that the maximum likelihood estimate can't honestly represent what you, the experimentalist, or the experimentalist that you're currently thinking about, knows about the system that he or she observed. The reason is it typically has zero eigenvalues. So if you have a zero eigenvalue in a density matrix, and you take that density matrix seriously, then that means that you're predicting that some measurement outcome will never, ever occur. You would bet infinitely much money against a plugged nickel that it won't occur. Now, all the experimentalists I've talked to don't have that level of certainty, particularly after making finitely many measurements. So what this is this represents absolute certainty. And what's really nasty about that is that that doesn't admit any error bars. You can't say I'm absolutely certain that this will never ever happen, and yet I'm sort of uncertain about the probability that it will happen, because if you were uncertain, you'd admit that maybe it could happen. Now, in case you're wondering, in case you're thinking, well, you know, here's some theorist gabbing on about stuff that, you know, technical difficulties, let me give you some examples, and I'm going to resort to that old standby, which is picking on your friends. This is a paper from 2001, probably the most cited paper that I know of in quantum state estimation, by my dear good friend Daniel James, who actually sort of got this whole project started. And I just want to point out, Paul was on this paper, and is Andrew in the room? No, okay. So I haven't managed to pick on all the authors. So this is the density matrix that they use maximum likelihood to estimate for a two-photon state. This is produced by parametric down conversion. Am I right? Yeah, okay, good. And this is a quote from the paper. These are the eigenvalues of this estimated state. We got a big one, we got a little one, and then we got two that are zeros. Not even any significant figures on that. But of course, this was back in 2001, 5 years ago, it's practically the dark ages. I mean, I was in grad school then. So here's something that's a little bit more current. This is from December of 2005. It's a Nature paper, really cool, where the Innsbruck group, hi Hartmut, estimated the state of 8 qubits represented as ions. And so they made a bunch of measurements, they did maximum likelihood estimation, and to demonstrate that they had produced an entangled W state. What I've done is I've taken the density matrices for 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 ion states, and I have plotted a histogram of the eigenvalues. So the red ones are zero. There's a lot of red over there. So all the probability is concentrated, according to these estimates, in a very small region of the Hilbert space. And the question is, does this really represent what we know about the system? Should we trust an estimation procedure that tells us that so many things are utterly impossible? Now, the usual response to this is, well, there's error bars in there. Now, I alluded to this before, but let me go into a little bit more detail. For one thing, it's not always practical to report error bars. I mean, you've got a humongous density matrix. I don't even want to think about how big the uncertainty, the covariance matrix in that would be. I mean, even Nature doesn't have room for that on their website. So, more importantly, if I put error bars on this estimate, what does it mean to say that the probability of something is zero plus or minus, you know, some delta P? I mean, this implies that my knowledge of the probability, i.e. the eigenvalue, is it's zero. Here's the mean of my probability distribution that I assign to that, plus or minus, you know, some amount. Of course, that minus is tricky. So really, I say I know something better. I know that all of these possibilities, these can't exist. So I know more than this. I'm just going to take this, and I'm going to get rid of it, and now I've got a new distribution, and the expectation value of the probability, according to my knowledge, is some small positive number in the middle here, and as an added plus, I've actually reduced my error bars just by observing that the probability can't be negative. So this is great, except that it's got sort of a problem. If you take a bunch of zero probabilities and you increase them, then we have to conserve probability, so I'm going to have to decrease the corresponding large probabilities. So you can do an analysis of this and you can guess various things, but let me just make one point. What happens if you have a big density matrix of the sort that we're going to be estimating when we're building tiny quantum computers and verifying them, and if you have a bunch of zero eigenvalues and then you say, well, I have to fix those all up by a little bit, what is the effect on these large important probabilities if you fix up 218 zeros by making them epsilon? So that's just sort of the thought I want you to have in your head as I move on here. The core idea of what Patrick and I came up with, and this is in QuantPH 0603116, will be our thinking has evolved. We will be reposting a new version soon, but basically this is the source for everything except my last two slides. The core idea is that a quantum state is a prediction. It predicts the outcome of measurements that you're going to make on that state. And so if we want to evaluate how good an estimate one state is of another, then we should define some sort of a metric that allows us to measure how well it does its job of predicting measurements. So throughout this talk, sigma is going to be my estimate, and rho is going to be some true state that I don't necessarily know, but that I'm trying to estimate. And we want two very basic principles in a metric. By the way, for those of you who are mathematicians, please don't take the word metric seriously. The best estimate of rho ought to be rho itself, right? I mean, if you have a metric that doesn't obey that, then if you knew the true state, you would nonetheless be motivated to report something that wasn't the true state. Deeply questionable there. So if my metric is f, then f of rho and rho had better be bigger than f of rho and sigma for any sigma that's not rho. The second is that we want this to be operational. We are motivated by analyzing experiments. And so we want some sort of a metric that could actually be sort of implemented in the laboratory, that has a meaning, that I think of as a physical quantity. When we apply these two rules, what we come up with is something called quantum strictly proper scoring rules, which, of course, like everything else in quantum information theory, was developed by going out, finding a paper that somebody wrote a long time ago and sticking quantum on the front of it. So there are strictly proper scoring rules, and if you know about them, then you will see where we came up with this. I'm going to blitz through a very quick derivation of this theory so that you can understand what's going on here. The key insight or procedure here is that we're going to imagine that some Victor the verifier comes along after you've estimated the state, and he's going to measure a copy of the true state. And then, based on what outcome he gets, he's going to pay you some reward. And this corresponds to, you know, any physical quantity. It could be dollars, it could be publications, it could be bananas, but it's something that you want. So you should report the thing that maximizes your reward from Victor. And Victor could be a force of nature, for all I know. It doesn't actually have to be that guy over at the NSA that doles out the funding. Okay, first of all, this is clearly operational because we're going to be computing the expectation value of something that Victor could actually do, and that expectation value is just going to be, this is in your head, you're imagining this, F is going to be the average value of your reward, the sum of the probability of getting outcome I times the reward if you get I. So Victor makes some POVM measurement, and what we can show then is that this F has to be of the form trace rho times a reward operator that depends on sigma. This is a very nice interpretation. Victor, depending on your estimate, is going to prepare some reward operator through some operational procedure, and then you get the expectation value of it. Since we've said that the reward that you get for reporting the true state ought to be bigger than the reward that you get for reporting a false state, then I can identify the value of this true state rho as the most money that you could possibly get from Victor, which of course is just f of rho and rho. And I call this value function g of rho. And then we can take this founding inequality here that just says that you have to be motivated to report the true state. I can add and subtract the value of sigma on both sides. Don't worry about trying to interpret that. It's just a mathematical trick, like so many other things that we do. And I get an equation that tells me that g of rho had better be bigger than g of sigma plus this extra term, which is sort of like an expectation value of the reward operator. And the point of this equation is it's going to strongly constrain the form of what procedures Victor can do if he wants to keep me honest. What we observe is that this bit over here is linear in rho. So if I plot g of rho, and rho, of course, is some huge, fancy, multi-dimensional parameter space, but this is just a symbolic thing that's standing in for the rigorous proof. If I plot g of rho, then on the right-hand side here, if I look at it around sigma equal to rho, I've got some linear function. And in order to satisfy this for all estimates sigma, that g of rho is bigger than the reward that I get for any other sigma, this line, this linear thing representing the right-hand side, has to be completely underneath the graph of g of rho. Otherwise, I would violate that inequality. So clearly, what I've got here doesn't work. What I have to do is I have to make this, the right-hand side here, I have to make a subtangent of g of rho. In other words, it has to be tangent at every point, sigma, and it has to be below it. You can see I still have a problem because even though I'm locally respecting the inequality, there's still some violation over here, which means that this particular setup would motivate somebody to lie. I have to make sure that this g of rho is strictly and through some convex analysis, you can show that this is actually necessary and sufficient. That for every strictly convex function g of rho, like for instance minus the von Neumann entropy, or minus the purity, you will get one of these strictly proper scoring rules. And then we simply identify the estimator's expected loss if they report some sigma that's not the truth as what we call an operational divergence. It's positive, and its port sigma is equal to this rho. So it's very much like a metric, doesn't satisfy symmetry or the triangle inequality. And for every strictly convex entropy type function, we get an operational divergence. It's sort of like taking the entropy and deriving the relative entropy from it. And in fact, that's precisely what we do. It turns out that if you start with the entropy as your strictly convex function, then you do in fact get the relative entropy as an operational divergence. You can make somebody expect the relative entropy between their state and the true state through one of these procedures. You can also get the L2 distance between rho and sigma, just trace of rho minus sigma squared. Both of these are in fact operational divergences that you could, if you were working for a funding agency and you could do any measurement that you wanted, you could implement and cause the poor experimentalist who's supposed to be estimating the state to expect that as their reward. Some sort of bad metrics include the overlap metric, which motivates somebody to not tell the truth because the sigma that maximizes this is the largest eigenstate of rho, not rho itself. Trace norm, very physically appealing, but it's not operational. You can't cause somebody to expect it as a reward. Same with fidelity. So we have operational divergences, which are good ways of evaluating estimates, and we have other things. And now I come to maybe the single main point of the talk, which is that armed with this, we can now come up with a state estimation procedure that unconditionally optimizes every operational divergence, including relative entropy and L2 distance. And I'm going to try to prove it here, but the key observation is that our procedure is linear, our reward is linear in rho, and as a result, if we know that there's some unknown state that we're trying to estimate that was selected from a distribution pi naught of rho, then what we want to do is, you can show that if you've made these measurements, your knowledge after the measurements is represented by the probability distribution you get by just applying. So you apply to your prior, and then you report the mean of that distribution. And this is unconditionally optimal, which is rather a neat result. So, okay, let me skip on ahead here. I want to show you two plots of numerical data really quickly. The point of this one, we did numerical simulations of experiments. We simulated doing measurements. We did data analysis. We estimated the state according to MLE and Bayesian. And then we saw which one works better. These bigger is worse. These are distances. The red is maximum likelihood. The green is Bayesian, except on this one, which is fidelity. Across the board, Bayesian does better than maximum likelihood according to operational divergences and according to every other metric that we tried. And the final point that I want to make is that we also tried a state estimation procedure that was proposed by one of these guys, I can't figure out which, which is very simple. You take your tomographic estimate, which is negative, you chop off the negative eigenvalues, and you renormalize. And here's the punchline. The blue, the red, and the green are still maximum likelihood in Bayesian. This is for 1 qubit, 2 qubits, and 3 qubits. And the quick and dirty tomography is not as good as the Bayesian, but it is better than maximum likelihood, which we found very startling because, as I point out up here, maximum likelihood is difficult to do. Bayesian is harder. The fact that this really, really simple, ill-motivated procedure was even better was a very interesting result. Thank you very much.